At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, September 16th, 2024 edition. Thank you all for tuning in to this hour, and we are excited to have you answer and answer your finance and investment questions. That's what this show is really all about, furthering your financial education one step at a time, one show at a time, one principle at a time, helping you set the right mindset so that you can make good decisions with your money consistently. Avoid pitfalls, capitalize on opportunities, and that's what it takes to be a successful investor. It's not just about chasing the sexy high flyer. It's about down-to-earth principles that are based on the facts on the ground, not hyperbole, not the not what sounds interesting. Oftentimes, the best businesses are fairly boring, actually. And we're not here to bang bells and whistles. This is not Kramer, okay? We are here to educate you. Now, to that end, I want to also remind you of another tool that we utilize to educate our audience, which is our wealth webinar series. And our next one is coming up in October, October 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific time. And it is free, and it's about effective ways to manage your 401k, 403b, your workplace retirement account, and how that should connect with the broader economy, your risk tolerance level, trends in the market, and your broad broad financial goals. And so that's what this webinar will be all about. How to know if you have a good plan, how to know what funds are good in your portfolio or not, or in your plan or not. Okay, so that we go over all of this, once again, October 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific time, and you can sign up by heading over to investtalk.com. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for today. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hello, InvestTalk. I had another option question, theoretical question. Curious how this would work out, where you buy a call option months out, expecting the price to go up. So, for example, if it's $10, you might be able to buy an option at $15. And let's just say I buy an option months out and, you know, my thesis is correct. The stock jumps up and it's now, you know, $50 more. Like, how do I actually close out a position? Because I was under the impression that someone would need to be on the other side of that trade, meaning they would need to buy a option back from me at that same strike price. Hopefully that makes sense, but I'm curious to hear what you guys say on the podcast, and thanks as always.
Well, in your example, that would be a huge win, right? Because you're buying a $15 strike, a $10 stock goes all the way to 50 in a month. Obviously, that's a massive move, but you're using it as an example, and that's fine. There's two options here, and you could either sell the option. The option's going to have a $35 intrinsic value, and then it's going to have time value left before the option expires. Now, if it's that far in the money, then it's not going to have a whole lot of time value, but there's going to be some time value there. So what most people are going to do is they would just sell the option, because the option should trade for $35 plus. Okay. Now, you could wait all the way once the option expires. If it expires in the money, and that's what you talk about, it's a $15 strike. It's at $50. That's a $35 in the money. Then it will trigger, and you will buy. You will automatically execute. Your broker will automatically execute you and have you buy that stock at $15 per share. Now, you could sell it the next day if you want. You know, usually, obviously, it expires on Friday. Monday opens, you could sell it, but now you're open to market risk. It could go down, it could go up, et cetera. So it's easier just to sell the option, and you don't have to commit the capital either, right? Because once you buy the option, buy the stock for $15, now you have to commit that amount of capital. So for every option that you hold, that's 100 shares times $15, that's $1,500 per contract that you would have to commit capital to. And I don't know if maybe you don't have that capital in your account. That's another question as well. So for the most part, like I said, you'd sell the option because it has that intrinsic value plus some time value left as well. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so. And time permitting, we will get to all of it. And our main focus point concerns this question. Tesla's return on capital is on the rise. And this is a measure of return on capital employed, which has significantly improved for the company, but there are red flags as well. So we will look at this a little deeper. In addition, we have other topics on the docket. One is in regards to the Fed meeting coming up on Wednesday. They are having a bit of a dilemma. Do they go 25 basis points, 50 basis points? They start big or small. And we'll look at kind of the evidence for one or the other and where I kind of come out on that, okay? Also, the efficient market hypothesis. Is it real or is it a figment of a professor's imagination? Okay, so we'll look at that and how what I think about the efficient market hypothesis. And then lastly, the 529 plan, college savings plan. Did you know it can now fund a Roth IRA? We'll look at that story as well if we have time. But as usual, we will get to your voicemail questions first. And we have one in regards to Devon Energy, another in Terex. TX is the symbol. We also have questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. And if we have time, we might fit in an iTunes review question as well. Now, of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions. Most of all, we love your live calls. So do not hesitate to pick up the phone and give us a call right now. If you're listening on the 4 to 5 Pacific time, our live streaming or on AM 1220 in the Silicon Valley area, you are encouraged to give us a call live. Now, we're going to a short break. And on the other side, I will talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the Invest Talk Anytime listener line. It's 888-99-CHART.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about H&E Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk,
Invest Talk.
If you're okay with that risk,
with host and financial advisor Justin Klein,
and that volatility, go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
Invest Talk.
Ticker symbol THT.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Let's go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
Invest Talk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market today. It was a bit of a mixed day overall. You had large cap growth really weighing on the markets. Now, S&P did end up slightly, about 7 points there. What was that? 0.13%. You also had the NASDAQ. Let's look at the NASDAQ. NASDAQ was down. It was down 91 points. What's that, about 0.5% there? And it was really driven by some of the major FANG names. NVIDIA was down nearly 2%. Apple was down nearly 3%. Tesla down about 1.5% there. And the value side of the market did very well. After last week where growth was the winner, we start off this week where value was definitely the winner. Large cap value up nearly 1%, 0.92%, and large cap growth down 0.06%. So the NASDAQ certainly struggled today. And that frankly has been the case since, go to this, I have a growth to value ratio that I look at. Basically, growth peaked out on, where's my cursor? There we go. July 10th. Ever since then, value's been really outperforming. And a big part of that is the weaker dollar. And the Fed, or the odds of a Fed cut by 50 basis points on Wednesday has risen to 60%. We're at 50-50, even 50-50 going into the weekend. Close today, we're at 62% chance there'll be a 50 basis point cut, which we'll talk about a little bit more later in the show. But that was kind of the market today. Gold was up once again, and actually it was about flat, but it did reach a new 52-week high, not by much, but it did. Very interesting day in markets, continuing battle between those that are worrying about a 25 or 50 basis point cut. What I continue to say, though, is what's far more important is what will happen with the Fed balance sheet. What's going to happen with QT? You know, are they going to end it and keep the balance sheet static, or are they going to continue with QT and, or maybe just reduce it a little? So that will be, I think, a much more impactful aspect to the Fed meeting on Wednesday, even though, you know, the jockeying for position on what they'll do with the interest rates will continue tomorrow and into the meeting midday on Wednesday. So that was the market today, but ultimately I'm here for your questions and hope you've been telling your friends that our Invest Talk audio podcast is available in video form over on our YouTube channel. And we get questions submitted via the comment section each and every day. So let's tackle one of those questions right now. Carter Erickson says, what do you think of MCHP? I have a position around 3%, and I'm wondering if it's worth holding or should I move on? Take a look here. Now, Microchip Technologies is a semiconductor manufacturing equipment company. They manufacture digital signal microcontrollers, flash memory products, and mixed signal and interface devices. So this is a name that historically is very cyclical. Its business is up and down, just like the semiconductor industry in general. You had earnings at 273 in 2018, then up to 311 the next year, then down to 281, then back up to 330, then all the way up to $6.02 in 2023. And for fiscal year 2024, $4.92, down 18%. And this next fiscal year, 2025, supposed to be down again to $2.01 per share, the lowest level in about 6 years. So clearly, near term, the business is decelerating. And I think that's my issue here, is the relative strength is 19. If you look at the relative strength of the SMH, it's at 77. It's drastically underperforming its industry. And now it's a good business. It's a good company with a fairly good balance sheet. Okay, let me pull that up here on a different computer. Or different browser. Good balance sheet. Only about $6 billion in net debt on a $41 billion market cap. That's fine. Return on equity is 20%. Return on invested capital, about 11%. All that's fine. Except for the trends, right? Because that's a snapshot of what's today. and the market is expecting earnings to continue to decelerate. So I would frankly move on. I just think there's better options out there. The technicals are poor. It's below all the major moving averages. MACD is below the zero line. I would just move on. Thanks for the question submitted over on YouTube. Now we are moving to a break. Still to come in this podcast, I'll tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to the main focus points as usual. So stay with me, but also give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk Wealth Webinar is happening online and free in just a few weeks. The Invest Talk Wealth Webinar will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Go to investtalk.com and sign up for our upcoming Wealth Webinar, October 8th.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So I get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, our main focus point is about Tesla and the fact that its business has been improving throughout the years. If you've been listening to the show for any length of time, you know, I've been a fairly big critic of Tesla and some of their business practices. And obviously, they've generally done well, even if lately things are getting a bit tougher. And what this article really focuses on, though, is a measure of profitability. It's a bit different. It's called return on capital employed, similar to return on invested capital, but it's a bit different. Okay, and basically it's return or pre-tax profit generated from a business divided by the capital employed in the business, okay? And Tesla's ROCE, return on capital employed, is 8.4%. And it's now in line with the industry average, which is interesting, because for years it was not, okay? And it's risen substantially. And this is a formula that typically is very good for stock returns in over long periods. You know, the Tesla has returned nicely, except for the past, let's see, since 2021, right? Peaked at $400 per share, now at $226. So it certainly has struggled ever since. Now, one issue with this measure, though, when it comes to Tesla is there is one big red flag, which is there's a high level of non-cash earnings. So this is a perfect example of how you don't want to take one measure and say this is all-encompassing. This is exactly how to view the profitability of the business, the quality of the business, etc. There's something called earnings quality. You know, how aggressive is a company in their accounting practices? And Tesla's always been very aggressive in their accounting practices. And that high level of non-cash earnings is a perfect example of why. And when you look at things like free cash flow, from Tesla, it's nice. You know, it's positive now, 1.7 billion, but that is down from about 9 billion in the third quarter of 2022. And so things certainly are heading lower. Earnings in 2022 are $4.07. Now this year, they're expected to be $2.23. So nearly down 50% over the past 2 years. So that's one issue. And then there's obviously the valuation, which Tesla's always traded at a very high premium. Price of sales is 8.3. Enterprise value to EBITDA is 55. 55, I always say, you want that typically lower than 20? Okay, and it's at 55. Now, one nice thing about their business is no debt. No, so basically net cash on its balance sheet. Now, the main reason, though, for that is they continue to issue more shares. Now, that's certainly slowed. You know, they were issuing shares at a rapid pace from 2016 all the way up until late 2022. And it's kind of leveled out, still rising, but at a much slower pace. So that's a bit of a positive there. But if you look at the profitability metrics, you're at return equity at 20%. We know, I've said this before, any mid to high teens or better, it's pretty good. Now it is trending lower though, from 32% in the third quarter of 2022 down to 20% today. So, you know, if earnings continue to decelerate, where will that head? And I think that's a big question. And so it's Tesla, while throughout the years I've been a big critic, it's kind of a mixed bag. It's still very expensive, but it is nicely profitable, even if that profitability is ebbing in the near term. And their balance sheet is just fine, which is, frankly, if you look at competitors in the industry, they tend to be much more levered. They tend to borrow a lot more money because it's a very capital-intensive business. But I wanted to highlight this because it's so important to understand the various aspects of the analysis of an individual company, that there are various levels of profitability metrics. You know, we just talked about return on capital employed. There's return on invested capital, which is similar but a bit different. Return on equity, which is probably the most commonly followed. And then there's return on assets, which is something that kind of filters out a lot of the balance sheet leverage that companies can have. So I kind of like return on assets a lot. And that's at about 12% on Tesla. So very interesting trends. It's been a difficult slog. Obviously, a lot of, you know, I would say shenanigans behind the scenes. But ultimately, it's turned into a company that's at least sustainable now, even if it remains extremely, extremely overvalued. And the chart obviously remains in a strong downtrend. That was Tesla and its return on capital employed measurement. Now, the next invest stock, the story behind this headline: maximize retirement savings, diversify beyond 401k and Roth IRA. By incorporating brokerage accounts, health savings accounts, and other options, you can enhance tax efficiency and gain more control over your withdrawals. This approach helps mitigate future tax burdens and also provides greater flexibility in managing your retirement funds. So we'll get to that story tomorrow and dig into the details. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. I have a special message for InvestTalk listeners. I want to tell you about a smart investment known as term life insurance. Here at InvestTalk, we are big fans of term life insurance for those that need to protect loved ones. Unfortunately, many people get tricked into purchasing whole or universal life, when a simpler solution like term life insurance is far superior. With that said, let me focus on Fabric by Gerber Life. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You could be covered right from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. Fabric helps make protecting your family's financial future a little easier with a term life policy that is affordable and can be customized to your family's needs. Listen, if you've got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, the time to lock in low rates is now. Remember, your children are depending on you. Getting Fabric is very easy. It is a 100% digital experience. There are no unnecessary medical exams. And Fabric even comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. If needed, you can cancel anytime. So build a plan that's tailored to your needs, with coverage ranging from $100,000 up to $5 million. With some plans, you can purchase $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. You'll see prices from as low as $7.86 per month, term lengths from 10 to 30 years. Apply online now or in the app, and if you need a hand, their licensed team is standing by. Fabric, F-A-B-R-I-C. Now they've partnered with Gerber Life, trusted by millions of families for over 50 years. So join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to help protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/investtalk. That's meetfabric.com/investtalk. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/investtalk. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
Hey, it's Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of Lovesac and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Want to skip the trial and error so you can head straight to success? Join me and incredible guests like Olympic legend Sean White and NFL superstar Rob Gronkowski as we share the lessons and mistakes that shaped our journeys. Ready to save yourself 25 years? Tune in on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson. Listen now.
It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. InvestTalk. Call anytime. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin, Luke. Good evening. This is Sid from Charlotte, North Carolina. I have a question about Devon Energy, ticker symbol D as in Dr., V as in Victor, N as in Nancy. I do have a small position, and lately I'm seeing a downward trend. Not sure if it's a good entry point and the fundamentals are strong. If you can give me your expert opinion, that would be great. Thank you once again. I will listen your answer on the podcast. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Looking at Devon Energy, about a $25 billion market cap, and it is an E&P. Exploration production company of oil, gas, and natural gas liquids here in the United States as well as Canada. And it's in a downtrend, just like most energy stocks right now, because oil has dipped below the $70 level for various reasons, but that is weighing on the sector as a whole. Now, the issue with Devon is that its stock is much weaker than the broad index. It's the XLE, the Select Energy Sector Spiders ETF, is at 29, and its relative strength is 29, and Devon is at 17. So it's certainly much weaker than a lot of the other E&P companies. Exxon's at 42 relative strength. Chevron is at 22, so that's certainly much weaker. But still, Devon's weaker than that. It's a 17. And so, and that's because earnings continue to be downgraded for this year and next year. And they're just not as well diversified as some of those larger names. So, you know, I don't have a problem with the company as a whole. I just think there are much better energy names out there. So it's really about how much exposure you have to energy. Do you, and are you owning any other higher quality ones that, you know, this may be part of a diversified set, but I just think there are better opportunities out there. Once again, no problem with the company itself. It's just, I like others much more within the industry. Thanks for the call. Now let's touch a bit on the Fed meeting coming up on Wednesday, and the Jerome Powell has a difficult decision to make. Does he start with a standard 25 basis point cut or go bigger with a 50 basis point cut? And, you know, typically they only go 50 basis points when things are, you know, when the market's struggling, but we're not, right? The S&P is near 52 week highs. Credit markets are just fine. So why go extra? Okay. Now, the first thing you have to understand is that they've kept rates pretty high for a good amount of time. We've been at about 5.3% on the Fed funds rate for about 14 months now. And that's a two-decade high, okay, in rates. And what the Fed doesn't want to do is prevent a soft landing. You know, they want a soft landing, meaning, you know, inflation continued to come down and unemployment rate not rise very much. Now it's risen about half a percent, right? 50 basis points. They're talking about the unemployment rate, but that is, you know, that is from a very low level. Okay, so low 4% unemployment is not anything to really worry about overall. Now, many can say, oh, the we're in the a tough trajectory for the for the employment picture, and they want to get ahead, right? They want to get ahead of the problems that are 3-6 months down the line, and that certainly could be true. And if you look at if you look at the inflation numbers, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag. CPI did have higher than expected housing costs, so that could be something that could prevent them from cutting 50 basis points. But the Fed's preferred inflation gauge actually was much milder in August than anyone had been expecting. So that's another kind of door open for 50 basis points. Now, hiring, like I said, is not great, but it's not getting substantially weaker either. If you look at unemployment claims, it's roughly where it was a year ago. Okay. Now, the market is expecting 100 basis points in cuts by year end. And there's only 3 meetings left. And so when are they going to do the 50 basis points if their standard cut is 25 basis points? Why would you do that kind of in the middle? Kind of makes more sense to front load it and then do 25 in November, 25 in December. Kind of makes more sense. Now, one could argue that, you know, their 25 basis points is an easy start. You know, they try to build consensus, and you know, it might be hard to get consensus on 50 basis points, and probably much easier to get consensus on 25 basis points. So that's the argument of, you know, them only moving their standard 25 basis points on Wednesday. Now, there are risks, though. Okay, and there are risks that are fairly balanced between, and they say this, between higher inflation and a weaker labor market. That's what Fed officials are saying. And if that's the case, then they need to get to something that's a more neutral rate, probably sooner rather than later, right? And they believe, all Fed officials believe, that the rate of neutral is below 4%. So logic would say, hey, if the risks are balanced, you're not trying to fight one or the other, you also need to get the interest rate level to a place that is more balanced, that isn't fighting one way or the other. And so the faster they can get to that level, the better. And frankly, that's probably the best argument. And that's why it's interesting that the market continues to move today towards that 60%+, that it's 50 basis points. And now they start the meeting tomorrow. There'll probably be some leaks out of there, and you know what they're talking about. And then the announcement will come on Wednesday. And I actually think 50 basis points does make more sense, mainly for that last reason. You want to get to neutral. You are clear. Inflation is what, 3%, 2.5%, depends on what measure you want to look at. It's positive by 2-3%, which historically is pretty high. And with the amount of debt in the system, especially government debt, that's a difficult place to be. And so getting back to neutral sooner than later makes the most sense. And that's why 50 basis points is what I am expecting. Now, this is Invest Talk. Let's keep things moving. Go back to the Invest Talk voice bank for a question that came in earlier.
Hello, Jason and Luke. This is Paulo from Davisburg calling. I have a question about Terex Corporation. Ticker symbol is TEX. It's an industrial name, and I have it in my portfolio, and the price activity was quite volatile this year. It went up like 20-30%, and now it's down again to the original price I purchased it. It seems relatively cheap to me. I'm curious what you guys think about this company. All right, looking forward to the answer at the podcast, and always love the show, and I wish you a good one. Bye-bye.
All right, looking at Terex, about a $3.5 billion market cap, so in the small cap realm, and it makes capital equipment for the construction, infrastructure, mining, and shipping and transportation industries. They make cranes and you know, just equipment to help in many different areas of those spaces. And so it's a name that's been around a long time, but its business is very up and down. It's very volatile. Earnings go up 200%, then down 100%, and back up. It's all over the place, okay? And so That's one of the reasons why it tends to trade at a fairly low P multiple, because even though it earned $7.10 last year, it's supposed to make $7.28 this year, it's supposed to make only $6.88 next year. And there's a lot of just uncertainty in the future earnings projections. And that's why it trades at a low multiple. But I do think that it is a reasonable bet because I do like the general sector that it's in. Its profitability is nice at 30% return on equity, even though that is coming down. But historically, it's in an uptrend. So I'm going to give that a thumbs up. Its balance sheet is very strong, very little debt on its balance sheet. And it did about $214 million in free cash flow in trailing 12 months. It's about a 7% free cash flow yield. They're not really issuing more shares. That's a positive. And its enterprise value to EBITDA is only about 5.5. That's pretty good. So yes, it has been volatile, but I think a lot of that has to do with probably jockeying for position on what the next move is in earnings. And overall, I think it is cheap. It's a risky name, as you see, with that volatility. But I would continue to hold it. If you zoom out to a weekly chart, it's actually in a solid uptrend. This is just kind of consolidation as of late. And I think there's more upside ahead. So I would actually hold Terex, T-E-X. Okay. Now, 2024 is moving fast. And the proof is that we are almost finished with the third quarter. Yeah, only a couple more weeks left. And I hope you notice that we're in a new market environment, and serious investors need to adjust their thinking to fit these times. We have higher inflation, we have higher interest rates, even though we have inflation and interest rates coming down right now. We are now in a secular environment where both of those are generally headed higher. You're always gonna have periods like this where it's gonna go the other way, just like from 1982 until 2020, you basically had interest rates falling consistently and inflation falling consistently, but you had periods where inflation did go up and interest rates did go up. Now that's kind of flipped on its head, okay? And that colors the market a bit different. And so you need to understand how that plays into the positioning in your portfolio, the risks that you're taking, and how that aligns with your risk tolerance level and your ultimate goals. So that's what we go over in a free portfolio review assessment, which we do. I do one pretty much every day with a listener. So don't hesitate to reach out and schedule one by heading over to investtalk.com, clicking on the portfolio review button in the top right-hand part of the screen, and fill that out, and we will get back to you and go over your situation and see if we can help as a manager of your portfolio, or we just give you a few pointers and you go on your way and you implement them. Both of those things happen depending on everyone's situation. So, it's a place where we provide unbiased guidance both on and off air. And if you do become a client, we practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. So once again, head over to investtalk.com and take advantage of the free portfolio review assessment. Now, we are going to go take a live call, which we love, and talk to Robert in Pleasanton, looking at STWD, which is Starwood Properties. The owner looking to buy it.
Yeah, I'm thinking about buying it, Justin. I'm just wondering what your take is on that specific REIT. And then just in general, as the Fed starts lowering rates, is that typically a good thing for REITs?
That is a good thing for REITs. Now, the one thing you have to understand is this is priced in. Everyone talks about, the Fed's going to cut rates. What's going to be good? It's already ran, right? The XLRE, which is the Select Spiders Real Estate Sector Trust, it was down to $36 back in April. Now we're at $45. It's ran up dramatically, okay? Remember, markets price these things in. They front run them. So what matters tomorrow is not the Fed, or sorry, Wednesday is not the Fed rate cut. It's really what they're going to say about the next few meetings, what the path of rate cutting policy will be. And is that different from what has already been priced into markets? And I could easily see the Fed disappointing the markets because the market is kind of priced in a pretty dovish Fed going forward. The answer to your last question is yes, but the market's already done that, Okay. Now, when it comes to Starwood, what's interesting is that it hasn't had the type of run that the rest of the industry has had. So it's really underperforming. And you're probably looking at that 9.4% juicy yield, correct?
That helps, yeah.
Yeah. Well, as I've said many times, interest rates, or sorry, dividend yields are very overrated. Very, very overrated. Okay. So don't be looking at that. Okay. You have to look at the trends in profitability, especially because REITs, their payouts rise and fall all the time. Okay. And what's interesting about Starwood is that their dividend yield, their dividend rate has not moved in a decade. Okay. It's been sitting at the same level. And a lot of people think that's a good thing. I actually think it's a terrible thing. Why? Because they're highly levered. Okay. They have a ton of debt on their balance sheet. They have about $10 billion net debt on about a $7 billion market cap. That's a lot of leverage. And their free cash flow is $452 million, but it's, you know, well off its highs from 2020 of over a billion. And it's fairly volatile. And funds from operation are supposed to fall 2% this year and only go up 1% next year. So in order to pay that dividend, they're continuing to lever up that balance sheet because their payout ratio is very, very high. It's actually 172%. The cash dividend payout ratio is 134%, meaning they're paying out more 34% more cash flow than they're actually bringing in. And the return on equity is only 5%, which REITs tend to have fairly low return equity. This is below average. And that's another reason why I think the relative strength is well below average. So once again, this is another example of why don't chase the yield. Go find a REIT that's actually performing well price-wise, and it's probably only yielding 3 or 4%, and that's going to do you much better than chasing this 9% dividend. So pass on Starwood. Thanks for the call. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So if you're going to call, you want to do that right now, 888-99-CHART.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now, here's another question that came in from our InvestTalk YouTube channel. Alex344 says, would PayPal be a good investment as a long-term hold? Now, PayPal is down substantially from its all-time highs around, let's see, what did it peak out at? Over $300 per share, about $310 or so. Fell all the way to a 52-week low around $50 per share. And now we're at 71. And its relative strength recently has started to improve. It's at 78. So it's now in an uptrend. It's above all the major moving averages. And so I kind of like that. I like the technicals have improved. And the business is slowing, though. It has slowed. Earnings are pretty much flat over the past couple of years. In 2021, they made $460, but then down 10% the year after in 2022, then back up 16% last year. And then earnings supposed to be down 8% this year to $4.42. So you're in a choppy earnings environment. And so the multiples should be low because growth right now is pretty meager, but that's kind of now reflected in the stock. Enterprise value to EBITDA is around 9.6. That's not bad. Price sales around 2.5. No dividend there, but free cash flow 6.7 billion on an enterprise value of 67 billion. So that's a 10% free cash flow yield. I do like that. And its shares outstanding. Let's see, what are they doing? They're buying back shares. So I'm starting to get fairly bullish on PayPal. Return equity is 22%. So I'm going to give PayPal a thumbs up now. Its technicals have improved enough to align with the fundamentals that are not, you know, trending in a bad direction anymore. They're just kind of neutral. And so it is a fairly good value right now. Now let's touch a bit on the efficient market hypothesis. And this came out of Eugene Fama, and he won the Nobel Prize in Economics in 2013. And the efficient market hypothesis is fairly controversial. What he's basically saying is that all stock prices are wrong in hindsight, but at any given moment in time, the prices of those stocks are roughly fair given all the known risks and returns already baked in. And this is, it remains controversial, like I said, mainly because there's a lot of mania, especially for things like artificial intelligence right now. And many people that had believed in the efficiency of the markets many years ago are losing faith, including a former research assistant of his named Clifford Asness. He says, markets have probably gotten less efficient over my career. And a lot of this, I think, has to do with market structure, the fact that so much money is in the indexes, and it is forcing people to buy or sell depending on, you know, their needs for capital. And they're not thinking about the value of, you know, the stocks within the indices. Okay. And, you know, this theory, and even Eugene Fama says it's a theory. And this has been around since 1965 when he wrote The Random Walks in Stock Market Prices. That was a paper that he wrote back at the University of Chicago. And this laid the groundwork really for the passive investing industry. And in many ways, I think this is dangerous and frankly wrong. And he admits it. Okay. What he says is that if you look at other professors that focus on investor psychology, and you know, he says that, quote, we agree on the empirical data, but we disagree on the interpretation. So behavioral science in his book is a different way of looking at the same data. He thinks that the investors are rational, and those in the behavioral science industry think that the investors are irrational. And I think it's pretty clear that often during manias, during times of hype and hyperbole, which we have now with AI, which we had back in 2000 with the dot-com bubble, that investors act irrational. So yeah, I think there are some parts of the market that are fairly rational, but there's often very large parts of the market that become very irrational. And that's why I think there's a lot of flaws in that hypothesis. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. It's another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And please tell your friends about our upcoming wealth webinar on October 8th. It'll focus on enhancing your retirement savings and effective strategies for managing your 401k. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.